Hello and welcome back to the Western Forces Podcast. I'm your host, Mark the Moose Haas. Joined as always by my general, Benny Hamlin. And I don't know, maybe one of the secessionists or union soldiers, JT. We haven't quite decided, but welcome to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast. This week we are discussing Civil War with our good friend Amaru Moses. The A-Train himself will be joining us in the third segment. But before we go any further, let me just say hello to you guys. How are you tonight?
Doing good, man. My lady's out of town for the week, so it's me and Dalton, the boys. You know, bachelor pad for the week. There's going to be a lot of food being ordered by Uber Eats, a lot of video games, and just me and Dalton the Bulldog hanging out on the couch.
Very nice. How about you, Benny? How's life treating you?
It's treating me well, Moose. I finished my yearly read-through of the Wheel of Time series, so now I'm ready to start watching movies again, so I'm pretty amped.
Nice.
Didn't Wheel of Time have an Amazon show?
It does. It's not a bad show, but it is in no way accurate to the books.
Okay. Good enough.
Super curious. I know we do a movie podcast, but have either of you watched Fallout at all?
No, I'm let's talk a little TV. I am going through Three Body Problem on Netflix right now.
Okay.
Have you guys heard of this show?
Yep.
Yeah, I have about two episodes to go, and then I'm gonna jump right into Fallout.
I have not watched Fallout. I will watch one episode. I was not a big fan of the trailers, but I will give it one episode to see if it hooks me.
We binged it over the weekend.
Holy cow.
Yeah. I would highly, highly endorse the show.
Okay. Listen, it's on my, like I said, it is up next. I would actually recommend Three Body Problem to you guys, but okay. It is high sci-fi. Like, you need to sit down, put your phone away. But it's very entertaining, and it's very, like, you're going to want to binge it also. Like, I've watched the first five episodes in 2 days, and I'll probably do the same thing with Fallout once I'm done.
If you've played the Fallout games and you enjoyed them, you're definitely going to enjoy the show. There's a lot of nods to the game,
nice.
But not so much that you are not able to follow along. Like, my wife didn't play the game, and she was able to follow along beat for beat. And I think Walton Goggins is just having a blast.
Is he not the best? When is Walter Goggins not always the best? That guy delivers every time.
Major League 3, back to the minors.
Yeah.
I bet he was even good in that.
He's the best in this show. Like, he's the best part of the show. He plays the ghoul. And yeah, he's fantastic. It's so much fun.
You guys watch? I would highly endorse it. You guys watch some Gemstones?
The Righteous Gemstones. Yeah, he's like Uncle
fantastic.
Baby Billy.
Yeah, oh, he's so good. And I loved him in the series he did with Dan McBride before that, Vice Principals. He is hilarious in that show.
My one critique. So my brother Tommy and my sister Renee both like bombarded my wife and I. They're like, you have to watch The Righteous Gemstones. You have, like, the show's so good. And like the first two episodes, there's just nothing but like just ween like, on screen like the whole like first two episodes. And so I like, wow. I text them like halfway through the first episode. I'm like, am I gonna, like, when am I gonna start enjoying this? And they're like, you just give it a time. But yeah, Walton Goggins is incredible in that show. And yeah, you could tell he's just like, this is the role that like he can sink his teeth into. He's having a blast.
Nice. Cool. Before we move on out of TV, I just got to mention this, because if you've been on Twitter a lot, I'm sure you might have seen this. X-Men 97, the animated series.
Ooh, so good.
Might be the best thing Disney has put out comic book-wise in years. I love the X-Men cartoon growing up. Never in my wildest dreams did I think a series that would continue it be as good as it is. It is. I said this, I messaged this to Lon Harris. I said, if they sold just this last week's episode, if they sold IMAX tickets to it, I would have went and saw an IMAX, because it was so freaking awesome. So guys, if you love X-Men, if you love comic books, if you were a fan of that show growing up, do not miss X-Men 97. It's the best thing on TV right now.
I 100% agree with you. 100% agree with you. It is the best thing on TV right now. Yep. 100%.
Awesome.
Let's talk some movie news, huh? Let's talk a little box office. We'll cruise through the box office pretty quick, because we've got a lengthy interview with Amaru coming up. Number one this weekend was Alex Garland's Civil War. A24's biggest debut so far. Also their most expensive movie to date, with $25 million making Civil War number one this weekend. Godzilla X Kong was number two with $15.5 million. That movie's raked in $158 million so far in the 3 weeks that it's been out. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire in third place with 5.7. So far globally, Ghostbusters has made $150 million. They estimate the total with marketing is about $200. So it's still going to need some legs to be able to make its money back. Kung Fu Panda 4 with another $5.5 million coming in at number four. Dune 2 in the fifth spot with $4.3 million. $280 million domestic for Dune 2. So that movie is definitely a huge win for them. Last week's Monkey Man dropped 60% to fall into sixth place with $4 million. That's $17 million for Monkey Man so far. The First Omen is in seventh place with 3.8. Shrek 2 had a re-release this week, and it actually came in eighth place with $1.4 million. I think that's the best of the Shrek movies. I don't think there's too much of an argument there. Number nine, The Long Game was $1.3 million. Wrapping out top 10 was Arthur the King with $852,000. So, boys, I threw a lot of numbers, threw a lot of movies at you. Let's do some high-level takeaways. JT, you go first.
Yeah, not a whole bunch to say this week. I agree, Civil War coming number one with I think a little bit higher than expected. They were saying around $20 million, so that's a good number for it. IMAX, obviously the big deal, the first film that they teamed up with A24, and it seems like I saw this in IMAX, and it was pretty much a packed theater. Again, I'm in LA, I'm in very much a movie town, so I'm curious, when you guys saw it, was it a full theater, or were you guys basically by yourselves?
When I bought tickets to see Civil War, I was the only person to buy a ticket, and I went and saw like a Saturday, like 1 o'clock showing, and then there was maybe about 8 to 10 people in the theater.
Okay.
How about you, so Ben? Yeah, I was actually surprised there was that many people on a Saturday afternoon seeing it.
I was all on my lonesome, but that is not unusual for the area that I live in.
Understood. I want to see like what your theater is like. In my head, it's just two guys holding a white sheet up with their hands and somebody running the film by a flashlight really fast.
The closest one is a theater from the 1970s, but there is a really nice one like a half an hour away. But I went to the local one, which is not that great.
Okay. That's a shame because the sound design in that movie is like this is a little preview for the review, but he went with the Michael Mann route of gunshots. Every time a gun is fired in that movie, it hits you in the chest. Michael Mann's really well known for doing that also. I think it was very effective. But listen, I'm glad A24 is making money. I want them to be successful. They're one of my favorite studios. I love the indie films. I love that they're reaching out and doing something, you know, an indie film, but with a bigger budget. I think that's really cool. So I want more things like this to be made. I want more movies like Civil War to be made.
I'll say this, as you guys know, I've always been on a crusade against A24, but in the last like handful of months, they've given me Iron Claw and Civil War.
Yeah.
I may have to start rethinking this, and that hurts me to do.
I love it. I love it. I love hearing that.
The vendetta may almost be over. We'll see. No surprises here. I actually thought Civil War was going to underperform. There didn't seem to be a ton of marketing for it. I mean, this seems like it could be a very like trivial type movie. And so I wasn't quite sure that like it was going to beat out a blockbuster. Like I think maybe a week or two ago said that Godzilla X was probably going to continue to be the number one. I'll save my complete review for the third segment, but I did enjoy Civil War quite a bit. And so I'm happy it did well. I'm happy A24 made money on this. The movie's going to need to have some legs. This is A24's biggest investment in a movie so far. And so this movie's going to need to make upwards of over $100 million to be able to make a budget back. But I think every dollar that was spent on this movie, you see on screen. So I'm glad it did well. And yeah, there's no real other surprises. So with that being said, I'm going to move really quick into some movie news, unless Benny has something to add.
I was just going to say, I'm calling it right now that even though I love this movie, I think it is going to have a huge drop off at the box office because I think people are going expecting to get their political Jones fix, and they're not going to get it. So I think it's going to have a huge drop off, which makes me sad.
I 100% agree with that. So I'm going to pick out, I've got a bunch of movie news, but nobody wants to talk Zack Snyder fixing Sucker Punch. Cause just shut the fuck up, Zack Snyder. We'll skip the Joker preview reaction just because, well, let's face it. He's probably just imagining this. There, I spoiled the movie for you. And let's talk about Glenn Powell is now signed on to star in a remake of The Running Man that will be directed by the Baby Driver director, Edgar Wright. I'll kick this one off because I'm thrilled by this. One, if there was ever a time to make a Running Man movie, and this could very much like be like a Hunger Games style type movie. I mean, because that's basically kind of what Running Man is a little bit. Like, it's a televised like slaughter of, you know, criminals, basically. And if you don't know, the original Running Man starred Arnold Schwarzenegger. And so I love and Yaphet Kotto is in. I love me some Yaphet Kotto is in the original Running Man movie. Had a slew of like wrestlers at the time, like popular wrestlers at the time, showed up quite a bit in the original Running Man. One, I dig everything Edgar Wright puts out. I don't think the dude has a single miss. His Cornetto trilogy is perfect. It is one of the, like, it's up there with like Back to the Future for me, like in terms of like perfect trilogies. I love Baby Driver. I love the way that he's able to infuse music into that movie. I like Edgar Wright's style. I think he has like a very unique like humor to his movies. And I think it lends very, very well, because this movie could be very either A, ridiculously stupid because it's just aged out and Hunger Games maybe did it better. Or B, this thing could land and just be incredibly awesome. And I think casting Glenn Powell, one, Glenn Powell is, you know, to quote Zoolander, he's so hot right now. And so I think that Glenn Powell has his options to be able to choose good movies from bad movies. And one, working with Edgar Wright's a home run for him. And two, this is a perfect platform for him. So yeah, I'm thrilled about this. I can't wait to see this movie. I can't wait to see the first trailer for it. Yeah, I'm all in.
All right. Well, let me be the opposite of Moose here. So I haven't liked the movie from Edgar Wright since Scott Pilgrim vs. the World.
Wow.
Was not a fan of Baby Driver. Was not a fan of Last Night in Soho. Was not a big fan of At the World's End either. I liked Shaun of the Dead. I liked Hot Fuzz to a degree. I thought World's End was the weakest of the trilogy. I thought Baby Driver just wasn't very... Baby Driver's not... None of these movies are poorly made, okay? Edgar Wright knows how to direct a movie. There's no doubt about it. I just personally didn't connect with his last couple films. Didn't really enjoy him. I saw him once. I didn't really have no desire to go back and watch him. But I am kind of excited for this because he's doing this movie. This is not a remake of The Running Man, the movie. This is a movie based on the book, The Running Man. So I think he's really going to make it his own. And I am excited about Glenn Powell starring in this, because if he wants to get away from the romantic comedy and go a little bit more action star, I think he can pull it off. I you know, listen, Top Gun, he was really good in, but he's in the jet the whole time. I would like to see him get a little more into physicality. The dude's ripped. He could be like a throwback to like, you know, an 80s, 90s action star. He's a real pretty boy action star, but if you've seen the trailer for his new film from Richard Linklater, I think it's called The Hitman, he looks fantastic in that movie. And he's oozing charisma. So I'm excited for him to get this kind of role, and I'm excited for the premise. I love the premise of The Running Man. You know, it's smash TV turned into a movie. It is, you know, people, contestants going against other gladiators. And, you know, the original Running Man with Arnold Schwarzenegger, I bought the 4K, I think last year, and I watched it not that long ago, and it still holds up really well. Is it cheesy 80s Arnold? Of course, but there's a lot of satire and, you know, commercialism. They touch on a lot of fun things in that movie. I think Edgar Wright has a real great sense of humor, and I'm curious to see how he works that satire commercialism into like this death sport. So if it was another director, I might be a little more excited, but I am excited for the cast. I'm excited for the premise, and I'm always rooting for Edgar Wright to make a great movie. So I'm hoping he makes one.
I'm going to pump the brakes on this one because I love the original Running Man. Like, I love that movie. It's so great. I love Damon Killian in it, you know, Richard Dawson, man. There's nothing about that movie that I don't like. I am not a Edgar Wright sensibilities don't necessarily land with me very often. I enjoyed Baby Driver. I like Shaun of the Dead. I don't really like most of his other movies. Like his sense of humor, just in general, it doesn't hit for me. So like the ideal, and I know nothing about the book. So if he's adapting the book, that's fine. But just in my head, when I think about like the 80s Running Man movie being done with his sense of humor, I'm like, I really don't want to see that. But again, if he's adapting the book, it's not the same thing. So I'll hold off judgment on that. And Glenn Powell, like, I don't know a lot of his work. Like, as you know, that rom-com he did with Sydney Sweeney earlier this year, I thought was atrocious. I thought both of them were terrible in it. And in Top Gun, I don't think he does really all that much. He's fine in it, but he's not somebody I'm like, oh man, I got to go see that guy again. So I'm waiting to see Twisters. If he butchers one of the greatest films of all time sequel, if he fucks that up, I will never forgive him and I will be completely out on this movie. But until I see Twisters, I'm holding off judgment.
Well said.
Fair. Okay. Next one I figured we should touch on really quickly because, I don't know, this sounds kind of bizarre to me, but this is a live-action Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, an R-rated live-action Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie based on the kind of a darker comic book storyline called The Last Ronin. What are your guys' thoughts? One, we're going live action again, pretty soon after the last batch of live action Ninja Turtle movies. And then B, what is your thought on like an R-rated Ninja Turtles movie? Like, do you see the turtles like dropping F bombs? Are we gonna see the turtles like making some love? Like, what's going on?
I hope not. I listen, it's got to just be for the violence. I haven't read the comic, but I know a little bit about it. To me, it's like it's kind of like a sure, why not? You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts. You want to make an R-rated Turtles movie? I'm not gonna say no. I mean, like, would I have asked for it? I wasn't asking for it. No, I was not. Will I see it? Yeah, I'll see it. I'll see what you come up with. I said this when we did the Ninja Turtles, like, I would love for them to make a PG-13, a little bit darker tone Ninja Turtles movie. I mean, look at The Dark Knight. That movie is very violent, very serious, very dark, but still PG-13. Casino Royale, very dark, very violent, but still PG-13. I wouldn't mind seeing that take on the turtles where you could still have a little bit of room for like fun and, you know, a little bit of, so at least some teenagers could go see it. But I'm really just curious how hardcore is this going to be? Because if you're doing a hardcore R-rated movie, you're using a giant turtle. At some point, it's going to feel a little ridiculous. So listen, go for it. I'll see it, but I'm not asking for it is what I'm saying.
The turtles are a guilty pleasure of mine. Like, I'll be honest, there is yet to be an iteration of the Ninja Turtles that I don't find some enjoyment with, from the old cartoon from the early 90s to the cheesy movies from the early 90s to the recent cartoon, even the Michael Bay movies, I find some enjoyment in them. But that being said, I don't think there has, other than the early 90s cartoon, I don't think there has been a great iteration of the Ninja Turtles. So, and I think there is a great iteration somewhere in this content. And so I want them to keep trying until they get it. That being said, this all comes down to the tone and the costume. Like, it's going to be very hard to design a Ninja Turtles costume live action that does not get goofy. If they can find like a designer that can do that, that is half of the battle. And the other part of it is, if you make it a ridiculous tone and just make it like hyper-violence, blood spraying everywhere, but then keep a story similar to the early 90s ones, that is not going to work. You either need to buy in with a serious story and serious violence, or you just need to let it be a kid's thing, one or the other.
I'm a little worried that this is going to try to tread on like a Deadpool-esque feel. And because the turtles can very much go in that type of direction, because look, for the most part, like, this is a children's property. And for the most part, like, most of the Ninja Turtle movies have like a like comedic degree to them. I think aside from the animated movies, because I dig both of the animated Turtles movies. Obviously, we have Mayhem and then we have the 2007 TMNT. I like both. And I like the 1990 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And the rest of them are all misses. Secret of the Ooze, Turtles in Time, Out of the Shadows, whatever.
Don't talk shit about Secret of the Ooze. I will take you out of the stream.
But like, for those don't work for me. And I worry that this is going to tread into a Deadpool type territory. And they're just going to make an R rating to make it R. If what you guys are describing does come to fruition and we get like a dark night type, the Turtles are maybe a little bit older. They're a little like world wary. Then I'm okay with that type of a tone. I don't know the storyline of the last Ronin.
Let me just tell you, it is not Deadpool-esque. It is very like a Frank Miller, dark, serious, like samurai within a turtle. Like, it will not be Deadpool-esque. I can promise you that.
Well, that's what you're saying. That's based on the comic book, right, information. But what we could potentially get can very well be tread into that Deadpool territory. That would be a huge mistake. And that's what I worry about because, I mean, how many of these movies do we go, dude, you had the Ghostbusters property and you gave us Frozen Empire? There's so many times that we review these movies and we're like, oh, come on, you have the source material, just stick to it. And the studios are trying to obviously sell toys and they're obviously trying to sell merchandise and, you know, future prospects for movies. And so that's the interference that worries me a little bit with the Ninja Turtles. I think they struck gold with Mutant Mayhem. I think keep going with those types of the animated versions of the Ninja Turtles and give us dark and gritty and bloody and gory and battle hardened Ninja Turtles in this one. That's what I'm really hoping for. So I am looking forward to reading like the up on the last Ronin storyline. So I at least have that idea. If it is Frank Miller-esque, I would love that. That'd be great. That could absolutely lend itself like a Sin City, but with Ninja Turtles. Like that absolutely lends itself to like a theatrical world. But again, I'm just worried that like, there is going to be studio intervention and we are going to get Deadpool Ninja Turtles.
Can I just say, if we're getting weird with it, there's an animated movie like a year or two ago called Batman versus the Ninja Turtles. If we're going to get weird, let's get weird. Let me see Shredder versus Batman. You know, Batman's taking on the Turtles and they team up, take on Shredder and Ra's al Ghul. That's what I want to see. Give me that movie. Live That's action. Ah.
This is a DC crossover kind of comic? Yeah,
it's an animated movie. It was one of their DC animated films. And there's a great scene where Batman and Shredder like have like a 5-minute fight and it's awesome.
I'm gonna have to find that. We are going to move on to our next segment, and we had a little debate on this, what we were going to talk about next. Should we talk about, like, mentorship relationships, giving the relationships in the movies? And you know what? We settled, because this is war taking place in modern day, we settled on best modern day war movies. So stick around, and you're going to get our take. And then after that, we've got our interview with the one and only A-Train himself, Amadou Moses.
They're young.
Yeah!
They're cool.
Excellent!
They're amphibious.
I never asked to look for a can opener.
America's most radical superheroes are now a real live movie.
A fellow checker, eh?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Cowabunga! Rated PG. Lean, green, and on the screen, March 30th at theaters everywhere.
Schwarzenegger's back and framed for a crime. He'll either do hard time or prime time.
Perfect contestant. I want him.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is the running man. When death is the game, you play for your life.
Drop dead!
I don't do requests.
The Running Man, rated R. Now playing at a theater near you.
Welcome back. And your extra movie butter boys are going to break down our favorite modern warfare movies. We're not talking about Call of Duty. I don't know, maybe. But for right now, we're going to talk about best water modern war movies. And I'm curious what Benny's got lined up for us here. So I'm going to kick it off to you, buddy.
Okay, I'm going to be honest with everyone. I'm going to throw out some retreads from other segments that we've done. Because I don't like war movies that take place in deserts. So pretty much any movie about Iraq, Afghanistan, like that, they're just not really my cup of tea.
Why is that? I'm curious.
I don't know. I've never found them. Like, I like my war movies like World War II and before. That's just always the way it's been.
Whoa, no Vietnam?
Not even really Vietnam movies. Wow. Like I don't like Apocalypse Now, Full Metal Jacket. You know, they're fine, but they're not really my cup of tea.
Platoon?
Platoon's not bad. So I'm going to start you off, though, with one of my favorite Clint Eastwood movies and a movie of his that I don't think gets enough love. I'm going with Heartbreak Ridge.
Yeah. Mario Van Peebles, baby.
Yeah, and it's a movie about the invasion of Grenada, which is not really a military action that we ever really think about, but that did happen in the 1980s. And Clint Eastwood plays like a grizzled gunnery sergeant training a group of recon rejects. And it's basically, it takes you through like their basic training and then their first real military action and the first real military action that the US has had since Vietnam. And so it is, you know, it's very fictionalized, but it's a really fun movie. There's a kind of a weird, very 80s specific love story between Clint Eastwood and his ex-wife, but the interaction with him and the guys in his platoon are just really entertaining to me. The war scenes, like for their time, were probably fairly realistic to what that invasion looked like in the 1980s. It didn't go over the top with it. It didn't glorify it. So all in all, it's a good war movie, but it's also a very good like military basic training movie. There's some laughs. There's some good fights. And overall, it's one of his lesser known movies. So if you haven't seen Heartbreak Ridge, it's definitely worth your time.
Good pick. Fun movie.
There's a scene at the end where Clint Eastwood like single-handedly takes out a tank. And then he's just kind of sitting there and like the platoon's coming out. And there's like the one like sergeant that's always kind of riding Eastwood's ass. And he like looks and he's like, "Did you take out a tank?" And Eastwood doesn't say anything. He just nods his head. Like, yeah, that was a favorite of my father's when we were younger. We watched that one a lot. That's a good one. All right, JT, lay it on us.
Well, since you mentioned Clint Eastwood, I'll go with his son, Scott Eastwood, actually starred in a little scene, but very well-directed, very heavy action, violent film called The Outpost, starring Scott Eastwood and Orlando Bloom. This is an Afghan war, and it's about basically soldiers that are given this base that's in between two mountains. And because of their location, they are basically one of the most dangerous posts in the Afghan war. And the movie is really about not just one platoon, but several different platoons that go to this base. And every time people die on the way there because they're being attacked, they die because they can't get the radio signal. And they also die because they're surrounded in all areas. So during the Afghan war, it's considered one of the worst places to be stationed. And the whole movie is very fascinating because it doesn't have like a regular structure of a war movie where you follow one character or one situation. It takes place over like a year. And the base is the actual star of the movie. While you have Scott Eastwood, Orlando Bloom, and all these other actors, it's all an ensemble. But by the end of the movie, it is very harrowing. And the last like 30 to 40 minutes is just one constant battle scene of the base being attacked. So it's a little flew under the radar. I got good reviews, but it's one of those movies I feel like a lot of people haven't seen, and I just want to shed a little bit of light on it. So check out The Outpost. I'm sure it's streaming somewhere.
Was that a Netflix movie or was that a theatrically released movie?
I believe I saw it in theaters. So it definitely got a theatrical in LA, at least. I think it may have been in like a small independent release, and then maybe it went straight to streaming.
How does Orlando do with the action?
He's good. So he plays one of the sergeants. He's not in it the whole movie. Like, he's someone who kind of jumps in and out. Okay. Scott Eastwood and the other actors, the young actors in the movie, like I said, there's no one star. It's more of an ensemble, but they all do a really good job. Even Scott, I think it's probably Scott Eastwood's best performance outside of, he was actually also really good in Wrath of Man, the Jason Statham, Guy Ritchie movie. I think this movie and Wrath of Man are the two best performances I've seen from Scott Eastwood.
Okay. So that movie has popped up like on my movie channel.
Oh, nice.
But it on the cover, like, or at least like the thumbnail that it shows on my movie channel, it shows Orlando Bloom.
Yeah, he's literally a supporting character. He's not in it as much as you would think.
I think they're leaning on people going to see because of Orlando Bloom. But
exactly.
I'll have to give that a watch. It sounds interesting to me. I mean, look, guys, there's one water war movie that, I mean, this movie takes the taco. And it's a movie, I kid you not, when I heard that they were making a sequel to this movie 30, 40 years after the original release, I rolled my eyes and was like, we don't need a sequel to Top Gun.
Oh, and then we got
Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah, I guess it's a modern war
film, yeah. I was like, I have no interest in seeing this movie. What? This is Reed Richards from Fan Four Stick, Miles, whatever. Like, I have no interest in seeing this movie. And Chance Ellison, actually, at one of our Schmodown filmings, was like, dude, you got to, it's my favorite movie of the year. He kept pushing me. He's like, you got to go see it. I didn't actually see the movie in theaters. I saw it on an airplane. So I was like, well, I got some hours to kill. And I watched it and I was like, I missed out on seeing this movie in the theaters, and it's so good. The feels are great in this. The action is so good in this movie. I just had an absolute blast from like beginning to end with Top Gun Maverick. And listen, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably did too. It just really is like a fun action packed movie. That's got some good feels in it. And look, I can't talk highly enough over Top Gun Maverick. So yeah, that's my favorite of the like modern war movies that we've had in the last couple of years.
Definitely the most fun you'll probably hear throughout this segment.
Yeah,
I mean, just a great blockbuster, bro.
All right. If he's going to throw out a Top Gun movie, I did this a few weeks ago, I'm going to do it again. The real man's version of Top Gun, Iron Eagle. It's a 1984 jet fighter movie, came out within months of Top Gun. It didn't steal from it. They were both in production at the same time. So it's about a young kid. His dad gets kidnapped in the Middle East. He steals a fighter jet and goes and bombs a bunch of civilians until they give his dad back. So it's like a movie that doesn't hold up now. But like, if you want to take a weird time capsule, like watch it and Top Gun back to back. Iron Eagle is a better movie than the original Top Gun. Top Gun Maverick is far better than both of them, but Iron Eagle is the better fighter jet movie of 1984. Stars Academy Award winner Louis Gossett Jr. Rest in peace. So if you just want to have some fun, cheesy fighter jet action, check it out.
I'm depressed to even ask this. Are we counting 80s movies as modern war movies? That's sad.
Like I said, man, I struggled with this concept, so I just went with anything after Vietnam.
Fair.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with what I consider the best modern war film, Ridley Scott's Black Hawk Down.
Sure.
He was nominated for Best Director. All-star cast before a lot of them were all-stars. Go back and watch that movie. Tom Hardy shows up. You got Ian McGregor, Tom Sizemore, Josh Hartnett. Orlando Bloom's back. He's also in that movie. Just great actors. Eric Bana. Maybe my favorite Eric Bana performance is in Black Hawk Down. So good in that movie. It is a masterclass in directing. There's so much chaos going on in that movie. The movie is literally almost a two-hour action battle scene where these platoons get, I mean, it's a real life story. I'm sure you all heard about it. If you haven't seen Black Hawk Down, check it out. It's a beautifully shot film by Ridley Scott. Great cast. And even though there's so much chaos, so much action, Ridley Scott as a director, you never get lost. You always know where you are. You always know where the bad guys, good guys are. It's a master class in just composing shots and geography of an action sequence. I think it's the best modern war film, in my opinion. And I think it's just an amazing film. Yeah, Black Hawk Down.
I have Black Hawk Down on my list as well. That was probably my number two to bring up after Top Gun Maverick. For everything that you're saying, and just like if you plan on watching a movie that will put you to sleep and you want to get a good night's sleep, this is not it. If you need a shot of adrenaline and just need to stay awake, watch this movie. This movie is like, there is 5 minutes of setup in the beginning and there is 5 minutes of ending that slows down, and the rest of this movie just puts its foot on the gas and keeps going. Like, it just keeps going. It really does put you in the like perspective of somebody who's literally there, on your boots on the ground with these troops. You're just experiencing everything that they're experiencing. And it's just, it's nonstop, this movie. And I agree 100% with what JTE said. Like, the action sequences are a masterclass in how to be able to film action sequences. And there's a little bit of shaky cam on this one, but it's because the whole idea is for you to feel like you are there with the soldiers throughout this entire like journey that they're going on. And yeah, it's an intense movie, but I agree with you. I chose Top Gun Maverick because I had the most fun with that. But I think if we're talking like best modern warfare movies, yeah, it's for sure Black Hawk Down.
Yeah. Agreed. Benny, I can't wait to hear what you say next. Oh, you have another one? Huh? Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I will probably throw this out. I think we can all probably agree with this one too. I mean, it got Renner his Oscar. It got Renner really kind of on the main screen. This is what got him into the MCU as Hawkeye, and that's the Hurt Locker. This is another movie. I mean, you go back, the cast and the Hurt Locker stacked as well. This is Bigelow won best director for this movie. This is another movie that like is a very, very, very intense movie. And you're dealing with guys who are you explosive ordnance disposal. So these are bomb diffusers basically. It's like for some of them, like especially Renner's character, it's almost like a drug, like it's almost like a high for him. But man, you just, the whole action sequences in this movie are like, there's several movies where I have like watched it, and then I like at the end of the movie physically feel sweaty. And this is one of those movies. So, I mean, talk about a masterclass in like storytelling and like action sequences. That's the Hurt Locker.
All right, guys. My last one here. It is a Denzel Washington and Gene Hackman spectacular, Crimson Tide.
Yeah. Good choice, Benny.
Yeah. So, the essential part of the movie is they are on a submarine. Gene Hackman is about to start a nuclear war, and Denzel Washington is basically trying to start a mutiny to try to stop there from being a nuclear war. You have like two like Mount Rushmore caliber actors, both of them like at high levels at the time going at it. You have a lot of Cold War intrigue, you know, and there's not a stakes really bigger than blowing up the known world. And that's why we need the Soviet Union back, guys, because we can't get movies with this intensity without the Soviet Union. So let's get it together over there, guys. We need the Cold War back. Our entertainment calls for it. Let's go.
That's a good choice. That's a great choice. There had like up until that point, like The Hunt for Red October was kind of like the like submarine movie I knew the most. And then, man, I watched Crimson Dawn. Crimson Tide, excuse me. I watched that one quite a few times. And yeah, I it's funny because when I watched these movies, I was a younger man and I didn't like appreciate like the acting caliber that goes into it. Like Viggo Mortensen's in that movie. And he plays the guy who like has the keys to be able to like set off the nuclear warheads. And like, I recently watched that movie probably in the last year and came away and being like, man, there are some like heavy hitting, like acting performances in this movie. So yeah, great choice, man. I love
Tony
it.
Scott, man. Tony Scott.
Tony Scott.
Probably Scott's, one of his best films. Yeah. Yeah. Scott's
know. The Scots know. They know modern warfare.
I'll throw a couple honorable mentions. You mentioned Hurt Locker. Zero Dark 30, I think, is an amazing film about a military operation. Peter Berg did Lone Survivor with Mark Wahlberg. I thought that was pretty good also. Very stylized. Eric Bana also in that film. I was a fan of that one. I'll give you guys a movie that came into the box office, kind of came and went, and not a lot of people saw it. But I thought it's pretty solid. Is it one of the best ones? No. But is it something I enjoy? Yeah. Talking about 12 Strong with Chris Hemsworth.
Oh,
Michael Pena.
They ride the horses.
Yeah, they ride the horses. Michael Pena and Michael Shannon. So good cast and great production value. Like, this was not a cheap movie. It's about the first mission the first mission after the 9/11 attacks. And the reason they're on horses is because they have to go through mountain to mountain, and they don't have the support that you need. It's a big action movie. A lot of really good actors. I enjoyed it. It's not like one of the best. It's not like I'm like, here's one of the best modern war films, but it's a good, solid one. I feel like was a little underseen and just kind of it came and went. But I think if you got a chance to check it out and you like a good war film, I think it's worth checking out for sure. Chris Hemsworth, you know, he hasn't made a lot of great movies outside of Marvel. This is honestly one of his better films. This and Rush are probably his two best films I think he's made outside of Marvel MCU.
I like Rush. I remember seeing advertisement for these, but I never saw this movie. I never saw this, and I never saw the Extraction movies with Hemsworth.
I don't love the Extraction movies. They're like, they have good action in them, but everything in between action is like fast forward.
Mm.
12 Strong has, like I said, Michael Shannon, Michael Pena. You got Chris Hemsworth. I think there's a good cast there, and the production value is really top notch. So it's worth a watch if you like those kind of movies.
The only honorable mention I'm going to throw out there is not a modern warfare movie, but it is a military movie, and that's The Finest Hours. It's the only good Coast Guard movie ever made. It stars Chris Pine. It gives me the feels. It's a Disney Saturday afternoon special kind of movie, but I don't care. It's a great rescue movie, and it's the only good Coast Guard movie ever made.
I fell asleep during that movie.
You bastard.
I'm with Benny. I dug that. Not the greatest movie. Yeah, I had a lot of fun with that movie.
It's like, fine. I saw it, and I like, yeah, it's fine. I'm not going to say it's bad.
I mean, it's better than the Ashton Kutcher.
Oh, God, the Guardian.
The Guardian.
Yeah, no, thank you. That movie
was bad. Costner, no way.
Yeah, it's better than that, but I mean, that's not saying a lot.
Yeah, fair enough. Folks, well, we are going to take a break, and up next, our review of Alex Garland's Civil War. We are going to be joined by the one and only Amadou Moses, the A-Train himself, from Bite Size Breakdown. I may have to step away for a little bit. JT is going to take the reins on hosting duties, so enjoy Amadou, and maybe I'll catch you at the end.
My dad believed in you. I'm not gonna make the same mistake.
You know what happens to you if you go through with this.
I have everything I need to have you court-martialed and dishonorably discharged.
The end is inevitable, Maverick.
What are you gonna do?
Here they come! Look in the air! Look in the air! Everyone!
From producer Jerry Bruckheimer, Black Hawk Down has been embraced by audiences and hailed by critics as one of the greatest war films ever made. USA Today calls it a 4-star knockout, and Newsweek raves Ridley Scott's uncompromising vision is awesome. And now it has been honored with 4 Academy Award nominations, including Best Director Ridley Scott. Black Hawk Down, rated R, now playing everywhere.
Hey, James.
How many bombs have you disarmed?
873.
You're a wild man, you know that?
It's reckless.
It's combat, buddy.
What do we have here?
Everybody get back! Go!
And you deal with it. Every time you suit up, every time we go out, it's life or death. You roll the dice, you recognize that.
Well,
Hey guys, welcome back to Extra Movie Butter Podcast. We are here with the one, the only Amaru. Did I pronounce that right, Amaru?
Amaru.
Listen, man, yes, this right is there. What there I go. Do. If I got it right, the audience would have been upset.
Probably.
I am only here to mess up names. I'm going to call you Big A for the rest of the show.
Works for me.
So I don't have to dance around my pronunciation. All right. So, guys, we're here to talk today about Civil War, the new film of Alex Garland. First of all, before we get into the review, what's your overall relationship with this director? Have you seen his previous films, Ex Machina, Annihilation, Men, which is very decisive? Big A, Emery, what do you think?
So I saw Ex Machina really late. I'd heard that it's like probably his best film, really great, amazing. And I watched it and I really enjoyed it. I have not seen Annihilation, and correct me if I'm wrong, Men is a horror film, right?
I don't know what
I'm not watching that movie. I'm not watching that. I'm not a horror dude. You have to be like Jordan Peele or something really, really like. I saw Talk to Me last year, hella late as well, and I enjoyed that. But I heard Men was divisive, and I was like, yeah, no, I'm good. I don't need to do that. Not my thing. But I always considered Alex Garland a director that people want to go see. And no matter, even with Men being what it was, it's kind of an exciting thing to get a new Alex Garland film.
I agree. He's very an intriguing director. He's not going to give you something very too cookie cutter. He always plays around with these big sci-fi ideas and big. So he's a director where I'm like, if I'm going to go see one of his movies, I'm going to have something to chew on once the movie is over. It's not one of those movies where you go see it and you just leave the theater like, I saw Fast 10. I forgot about it within 24 hours. That is not an Alex Garland movie. Benny, what's your relationship with Alex Garland? Have you seen his previous work, and are you a fan?
I have not seen Alex Garland's previous work. I thought he was the guy from Daddy Daycare. And that he was making A24 movies. So I was like, I'm going to pass on that really hard. But after seeing Civil War, I'm going to go back and watch his filmography this week. So
that's exciting. And I think you're going to find the films before this film are exploring much more interesting and more out there ideas than this film. So I'm very curious. And he really has lived in kind of the world of sci-fi. And I'd also recommend checking out a show that he directed for FX called Devs. Personally, might be my favorite thing he's done so far. It's like a limited series. So it's not like you have to watch season one and two. It's just a limited series that he did for FX. I think it's maybe 6 episodes. Nick Offerman is actually also in that series, and he's really good. So I would highly recommend checking out the show Devs. You can probably find it on Hulu because I believe it was on FX. So, guys, if you liked his movies, if you liked this movie we're about to talk about, highly recommend you check out Devs on Hulu/FX. All right, guys, so let's get into it. This movie is called Civil War. It is literally about what if America went into a civil war. This is one of A24's biggest budget films. They're trying to make more, I'm not going to say more commercial popcorn films, but they're trying to expand their budget of their films. They want to keep that essence of the A24 sensibilities of independent film, but giving it a bigger stage, a bigger canvas to paint on. And I think it's really interesting that they did Civil War, a war film with Alex Garland. It opened in IMAX. It was also the first time A24 has had a deal with IMAX. So we'll start with you, Big A. What do you think overall of Civil War? Did it work for you? And do you think A24 has a hit on their hands?
This is the best movie of 2024 to me so far. I think 2024 has been a slow year. And I know people are like, well, we're just getting into it. It's January, February. January and February in like the last decade has not been the dregs that it was when I was growing up in the 90s and the 2000s. Like you get some damn good movies and some surprises out of that. Like, I'm going to pull out this random ass movie last year that a lot of people will look at me like crazy, but like, I saw Plane in January, and I loved Plane. And I was like, that is a surprisingly good B action film. We got Beekeeper, which was great. It fit the same role for me. And then it was slow as hell after that. It was a whole lot of just, that was fine, that was cool. You got Dune Part 2, which I absolutely loved. But I'm going back to Civil War before I go back to Dune Part 2. I thought it was just, before even going into like, the nitty-gritty of what people are talking about, it's an entertaining fucking film from front to back. The performances, the action, I love the story. The sound design is wild. just everything just auditory related is like the music choices, the score choices, the sound design, like I'm just starting to get into the other aspects of movies and really appreciating that. And that shit stuck out to me. I really enjoyed this film, and I definitely have to give a shout out to one of the most underrated actors in movie today, Stephen McKinley Henderson. You see him in a film and you know shit's about to get good. So I thought he was amazing. It is my favorite movie so far this year.
Wow. So big thumbs up for Amaru. Yes. I'm just going to butcher it so many times. Amaru. Benny. Hey,
that was better. That was better.
Amaru. Benny, what were your thoughts on Civil War?
Amaru nailed it. It is so far the best movie of this year, and I don't think it's even really close, to be quite honest with you. I mean, as you know, I'm not a Denis Villeneuve guy. I like Dune 2, but, you know, his stuff's just not up my alley. But this movie, I loved. It worked as an action movie. It worked as a drama movie. It really worked as a bizarre meta comedy for me. You know, it worked as a political thriller. So there's just like, there's no level that it didn't work for me. Like, there are a few like nitpicky things I have about it, but it's really rare that a movie, you know, from start to minute, like the movie just flies through and I'm like, oh wow, that's over. You know, it's not a short movie, and it felt like it flew to me because the entire time I was engaged by the characters, I'm engaged by the action, and I'm engaged by the dialogue, man. So to me, it was like triple crown movies, and those are not too common for me. So I was super thrilled by it.
Yeah, I really have to piggyback on one thing I wasn't expecting that I really enjoyed was the humor. There was a lot of funny as hell moments that I was not like thinking was going to come with how heavy a lot of this stuff is. So I definitely have to agree with that, how weirdly funny this film is.
All right, guys, you two big fans, two big thumbs up. I'm coming in a little more mixed than you guys, and I'm going to try to explain myself before we get into spoilers, which you will be doing very quickly because this does feel like the kind of film that you really have to talk about what happens in the movie and some of the scenes. So I'll just give my overall thoughts. So here's the thing. I saw it in IMAX, full theater. I was fully engaged the whole time I was in the movie theater. This movie is a very visceral film. It has several scenes where the tension ramps up and ramps up. Visually, at times, it's beautiful. The use of music with the images, I thought, was really well done at times. And the action, I hate to even call them action scenes because it's not like an action movie where you're like, ooh, I can't wait to see, you know, these explosions. This is more of a real world kind of violence. You don't really want to see it, but you witness it, and you're witnessing it more for the craftsmanship of the director showing you how this kind of situation will play out. I think what comes down to it for me is I just felt like the film didn't give me much to chew on after the movie. I feel like once I left the theater, there weren't a lot of ideas, or I'm not quite sure what the director was trying to say with the film, because he purposely does not get into why we're at a civil war. You just know that Texas and California are going up against the rest of the United States, and that we're at this point in the war, it's been dragged on. We're actually closer to the conclusion of the war than like the beginning, which I thought maybe this would show the evolution of the civil war, but no, we're kind of coming at the tail end. So after I left the film, while I enjoyed it for its craftsmanship and the scene by scene tension, like I said, I was captivated throughout the whole movie. But a day later, two days later, I don't find myself thinking about the movies too much because I don't think the movie had a lot to say. I think it's more of just kind of like a crazy, visceral ride, but it's not really saying anything. It feels kind of empty in a lot of ways to me. But at the same time, like I said, I had joined myself in the theater. So I guess, but I also don't want to be like, you want to have a good time at the movie? Go see Civil War. Because it's not a good time. It's not really a good time. It's a visceral, you know, yes, grueling experience. So in order to get into all these other reasons why I don't think it really was saying much, we'll have to get into spoilers. So my general thoughts is I enjoyed my experience watching it. I felt a little mixed on it coming out. For certain reasons I'll get to in spoilers, but I feel like a day or two later, I'm not thinking about this movie like I thought about Annihilation, like I thought about Ex Machina, how I thought about Devs. Like those movies I still think about to this day because the things that he's exploring are relevant even more so now today than they were when he made those movies. I don't know what's very relevant about this film and how much it's going to, I'm going to think about this film after a month, a year, you know, 2 years. Do you guys disagree with me anyway, without getting into spoilers? Do you guys disagree anyway or feel differently?
I do disagree with you in the fact that I think if you're going into this movie expecting like something to chew on politically, you're going to get disappointed.
Correct.
That's not what the movie is about. The movie is about compassion fatigue and desensitization. You know, that's what the movie is about. Like, you go on this journey with someone who is dead inside because they've seen all this stuff. So like what it's saying, I think, is very relevant, especially if you've been in like if you've ever worked in like a high stress field, like law enforcement, crisis, mm-hmm. nursing, things like that, where you may see someone die on a given shift at work. This movie has a lot to say for somebody that goes through something like that. And like I said, you know, for like 20 years, I was a crisis worker and I saw like a lot of messed up things. And towards the end of it, I was a lot like that lady. I was fucking dead inside. Like, somebody could just get beat to, you know, until they were bleeding in front of me. And I'd be like, where the fuck is the coffee creamer? You know, that would be where I was at mentally at the end of the shift, no matter what I saw. And so for me, the movie had a lot to say because, you know, I understand what this lady is going through emotionally. And to see that cycle of how, you know, the process of being desensitized and learning not to care mm-hmm. is like reinforced generationally. You know, like you see this young girl that goes from someone that's wide eyes and optimist to start going down the same road as this lady that's completely dead inside. And so to me, the life cycle of that with all of these characters is very interesting because I can relate to, on some level, those experiences.
And that's one thing that's interesting about this movie. You asked me, is this movie about the Civil War of America? I'm like, yeah, but it's more about photojournalism and journalists and what they go through. And for me personally, I've seen better films. I feel like this movie kind of just scratches the surface. Rosamund Pike made a film a few years ago called A Private War about a real life photojournalist who died over in the Middle East. I thought she should have been nominated for Best Actress that year. I think she would, there's like a small possibility she could. That movie explores what this movie is kind of touching on, I think, in a way better way. You can even go back to the 80s, Roland Joffe's The Killing Fields, another great film about a photojournalist who's stuck in the middle of a war and how his relationship with his interpreter and how that changes his eyes and, you know, the things he sees. So to me, I felt like what he was exploring with the photojournalism aspect of it and what they're going through, I just like, I've seen this done so much better and so much deeper that this felt like a very marginal version of it, but that's just how I kind of read it. Amaru, do you feel any differently?
So for me, I left based off, you kept saying it, you said it already, how visceral this movie is. And I kind of left with just, he wants you feeling impacted. And like Benny's connection, I didn't have that connection. So that didn't clear for me. I was going more over the war itself. Like, I've had conversations with people like, well, not going into the political, not going into like where America is at is kind of hindering the film. And I'm like, in my head, I only think America is there to have the most impactful setting. Like, where are we going to have the most impactful setting where war can be shown?
Agree.
That's America, because we aren't there, and people are hoping that we're not going to get there, but there's a slight possibility. But I think he's just using that just as the most impactful setting and using the photojournalism to basically put forth what war is. What any horror might be, I really think his impact was maybe it's a warning, maybe it's just a road film, but basically it's what he's doing right now is through the lens of photojournalism, when we don't consider and think about the things we're seeing and the things we're doing, whether it's politically, whether it's desensitization, let me show you what we're going to get to and what is going to happen if we don't stop and think about. He had an interview earlier about like the polarization of politics and how he's talking about the polarization can get there. So maybe he had a little bit of that in his mind. But I was impacted by the fact that he was like, I'm trying to take as much bias out of this as I possibly can. And I'm making this a movie for you to feel impacted about what the aftermath of whatever the issue is. That's what I'm doing. And the best way for me to do it is through photojournalism. So yeah, I can definitely see your point that the photojournalist aspect wasn't like, nothing was delved too deep. And for me, I enjoyed that because it really put front and center what I think, at least for me, was supposed to be front and center, is the consequence of not thinking is this. It's two people fighting each other, trying to kill each other. Who gives a fuck what it's about? Who gives a fuck why it is one person trying to kill another and not knowing why we're doing it, but it's happening anyway and people are in it. Look at what happens when we do that. And that's kind of what I've been chewing on since.
Interesting. All right. So I think we need to get into spoilers so we could really explore kind of what the director was trying to say or what we pulled out of it and, you know, to get some of my criticisms and so on. So let me just say this. We're in spoiler territory now. This movie, I have no issue with this movie not telling you what the politics are. We live in a crazy enough time where I could fill in those blanks. Like, it is not implausible for us to walk in this movie and be like, oh yeah, the way we're going, I could see us being 5-10 years from now. So to me, that aspect of the film, it's not a criticism for me. I did not need a whole backstory. I did not need to know why Texas and California teamed up. It's all kind of there. I mean, I think you could bring a lot to this movie if you just watch enough news on your own time. So for me, I'm like, okay, so he's not picking a side, which I think is very smart. I don't think he should have chose a side. I think he just wanted to show, like you said, Amaru, the violence and the impact it's having almost as a warning. So for me, through the eyes of this journalist and the relationship for me that I think you're supposed to kind of hinge on a little bit is the relationship between Kirsten Dunst and the young wide-eyed journalist who kind of becomes like, you know, she tags along for the ride. She talks her way into the car. This girl, first of all, she's a girl from Priscilla. She looks like she'd be 16 years old. She looks so Spady, young. Yeah. Kate and Spady. I didn't buy that relationship, and I didn't buy that from where the movie began, which was just a couple days before they get to D.C. and the White House. Where she starts and where she ends up didn't feel earned to me. I felt like basically this girl picked up a camera and was like, can I come with you? By the end of the movie, she's like storming the White House with this freaking army. And I'm like, so what? She just basically had to pick up a camera and all of a sudden you could be like a war journalist. I didn't feel that relationship was very well defined or earned. And I get that Kirsten Dunst is like one somebody who's seen it all, desensitized to it all. But then she goes back on that in the very last few moments, you know, the death scene where she jumps in, she breaks everything that we've kind of known that character to be. She abandons it in the last second when she goes to save the younger girl and gets shot. And then the girl shooting her with the photo as she dies. It just all felt false to me. It didn't earn that moment for me. It felt kind of comical to me at times. So to me, like, all that stuff didn't really land for me. So therefore, the movie wasn't as successful as I was hoping it would be. But did those things work for you guys? Did that whole relationship between Kirsten Dunst and the younger girl, do you feel like she earned her place by the end of that movie? And honestly, the death scene, her shooting those photos, like, I just felt unbelievable to me. The Civil War felt more believable than what happened at the end of this movie.
So I'll tell you this. I don't completely disagree with any of your criticisms. I don't think it's a perfect movie, but I enjoyed it massively. I believed it enough. I'll tell you this. Kaylee Spaney was my least favorite part of the movie, even though I liked everybody. I like Wagner Moura more. I like Kirsten Dunst more. Mm-hmm. I thought Stephen McKinley Henderson was the best part of this movie, who had the most time in there because Jesse Plemons came in and did what Jesse Plemons does. But I believed it enough. I believed that she, from the very first moment she went to go talk to her, she was trying to find her way in. Like, I could see, like, using the fact that she looks so young and looks so innocent, but then throwing in the random line in the middle of there. No, she's 23. She knows what she's doing.
She's a fangirl, too.
She's going to get in and she's going to try to make her way to get to the point that Kirsten Dunst is, because she knows Lee's career. She knows who Lee is. And she's like, how am I going to get my way through this? And they try to make it seem like she's still, and I'm saying this seems like I don't believe it, that she's still innocent because of the dudes that are hanging, because there's a whole scene where they stop for gas, and yeah. she takes a picture of two guys that the gas station clerks are hanging for. I can't remember if it's trying to steal gas or something like that. They drop enough hints here and there that it worked for me, that I could see her going through that growth because she has her own little agenda. And the setup that they have with one of the early conversations between Lee and Kaylee Spaney's character, I can't remember her name, where she asks, if I die here, will you take a picture of me? And then flipping that, I enjoyed that. I liked that callback and how that was. I will say, and I'll agree with you, it's not that I didn't believe that Kirsten Dunst wouldn't save her. What I didn't believe, and I was like, really though, was that she didn't jump in front of her, push her, and then drop. Like, that was the part. I was like, you didn't have to get shot there.
Tackle her to the ground.
Tackle her something. You didn't have to stand there. That was the one part I was like, okay, you're doing this for the conversation you had before, which was a nice little pin. It's a little, that part's a little unbelievable, but I'm okay with it based off of what you've built up to.
Okay. Benny, how do you feel about that whole ending, the death scene, and the relationship overall?
I thought the entire ending was funny. So it was kind of a little bit of a departure from a lot of the seriousness that was leading up to that. But that didn't really bother me so much. I think a lot of the problem that you're having is just the way that the actress looks. Like, I agree with you. She looks like should be in high school. And for like the first 10 minutes, I'm like, it's kind of creepy that these 40-year-old people would just pack this 15-year-old girl in a car with them and take off across the state. You know, it was really weird. And like, you know, at first that hung with me. I had to look up afterwards, like how old the actual actress is. And she's 25. And mm-hmm. so like after I knew how old the actual actress is, like in retrospect, it bothers me less now when I go back and think about the movie. Like eventually her performance was good enough that I stopped thinking about that after probably like the first 10 minutes. But, you know, a 25-year-old would be in that position of their career going out, trying to make their name, trying to break in. So she's of an age like in real life where she would be trying to do that. And this is one of those movies where, like, I think I may in my own head read more into the movie than even the filmmaker was putting in. And that's part of why I enjoyed it. But I view all four of the people in that car as like one single character, like on a continuum of like a journalist lifespan. You know, there's someone starting, there's someone that's still, you know, right in the middle of it, being thrilled by every second of it. There's someone that's sick of it and wants to be done with it. And then there's someone on the other side looking back, just trying to get another moment in it. So like in this one car, you're getting the entire lifespan that these people go through. And so I kind of viewed them all as like a four-headed singular character. And I think that's part of the reason that a lot of the stuff in the movie worked for me, is because I was viewing them sort of as a whole, as opposed to these individual components. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I understand what you're saying. I think for me, so listen, I went into the movie not caring about what the political sides that he was taking. So as far as him trying to say something about America, I don't feel like he was really trying to say anything politically. I don't feel like he was also, I don't think if he was trying to make this movie about journalists and war, I don't think he accomplished that really either. I think it's very surface level. And like I mentioned, the other films I've seen before, when I watch A Private War with Rosamund Pike, I felt so much danger for her every time she had to go into battle and she had to take these pictures, that I really felt like she was putting her life on the line. Whereas in this movie, every time they came into a conflict outside of the Jesse Plemons, that was horrifying. But every time, like the snipers, when they actually go to the White House, when they stop and there's like a battle between two people in like a building and a higher building and a guy's stuck behind a pillar, it felt like these characters had like, you know, magical armor on them. At no point was I worried for their safety, and they didn't seem like they were worried for their safety. They're just like, oh, we were just here to capture the war and take pictures. And like, people are getting shot to hell around them. And they're just like, oh man, I can't believe we're going to get this picture right now. They almost seem excited, like they're getting a rush, which I get that part. But it also felt like like I said, like they were wearing this magical armor, and at no point was I fearful for them while they're in the heat of the battle capturing these things. It was only when they came across Jesse Plemons, because that wasn't a battle scene. That was just two people who got kidnapped by these guys who kind of went rogue, were just killing people. We don't know exactly what they were doing, but Jesse Plemons gives a great performance. It's terrifying. The whole scene is terrifying. But anytime they were in the battles, it felt like they were there and given unbelievable access, and almost like the other side knew not to shoot them. It's almost like, oh, there's the photographers. We don't have to worry about them. They're just photographers. I feel
that's
like
some pretty shitty armor. Half of them are dead at the end of the movie.
Well, that's different because the one guy gets shot while after he hits Jesse Plemons. That was not a war scene. That was a scene that was, like I said, that's separate. But the scene where she dies in the White House, she does it stupidly, and Kirsten Dunst saves her, and it was not staged very well, and it was not very realistic. It was like the final death of the movie that was supposed to be kind of the point. But all the scenes before that, the sniper scene, the scene where the guys are, you know, have the higher advantage in the building, even the White House, and up until that final moment, and there felt like they were in any danger, and it felt like everyone was just cool with these press people being around. It's like they have a free pass to walk through the war zone and not have to worry about anything because they're press. And I just feel like that is not how it is, especially when compared to other films, to me, that show what journalism during war can be and how horrifying it can be and how much danger those people are put in. This movie just successfully did not pull that off for me, and it kind of took me out of the movie. Now, again, I enjoyed my time in the movie because it's well shot, it's well directed, and it's a great visceral experience, but it feels like empty calories. It's a Coca-Cola. Tastes great, flavorful, popping all over the place in my mouth. But the second I leave, there's no calories there for me to digest. So any response to those comments I just made?
I think all the other movies take place in foreign countries. So I think correct. If there was a war in the United States, people would go out of their way to get that just on TV, because that's how we have become. Like, I'm sure like Bright Size Breakdown would have a weekly, this is Jim, Jim's wow. killing Jim, like live on Bright, wow. you know, like on their website. That's how it would go, like in this country. I think there would be YouTubers running around just filming mm-hmm. snipers if we actually had a war on our soil, because we're vapid. I think that's what would happen.
I feel like the fact that it's America doesn't add too much to the actual movie. This could have been in another country and you could have told the same story. It could have been in Colombia or England. It could have been any other, you know, Civil War regime. I don't quite understand, because he doesn't get into any of the politics and he doesn't get into why they're fighting or any of that stuff. To me, it's just window dressing. The fact that it's in America is just something different and new, but doesn't really add to the story.
For me, I think the reason he needed to put in America is to be able to tell this, because when I was watching, I was like, this is a hyper stylized version of what could happen. So like, we are going to protect the press in America. We are going to try to give them access. We are going to try to claim the importance of freedom of press in a situation like this, when we have such a hyper-violent thing going on. So all those aspects, like of not feeling afraid for the press, it wasn't something I was focusing on. I really was focusing on what was being captured. Like it wasn't until like which is funny. I actually felt the same way as you when we were in the battles. I didn't fear for them. It was outside the battles. It was after we got out of the battles and after what they were witnessing. It was like, the importance of let them get what they're witnessing. Mm-hmm. Take the pictures, see the everything that's horrific. Mm-hmm. Make sure those gets captured. What happens after? What happens after they're dealing with what they took the picture of? What happens when we're not in a fight and somebody is just taking advantage and it's two guys who are just killing people randomly, not while you're trying to shoot pictures.
Outside of the Jesse Plemons, because I think that's the greatest, best example. That and the gas station. Those are the only two real examples.
The gas station after.
Yeah, but nothing really happens there. And those settings could have been in any other country. What about this being in the U.S. you think benefited the film? Except for the wow factor of, it's America getting attacked.
I think that because I think that's the main reason. I don't think we have these conversations and it's as divisive or think piece-y as if it is somewhere else. If it was somewhere else, I think people would have just took it as a regular road film, war film, wouldn't have been talking about it too much. It's the fact that this setting will make these kind of conversations. Like, wait a second, where are we right now? What are we doing right now? Is this real? Is this way too oversimplistic, or will it actually happen?
But the movie at no point gets into the politics of why they're fighting or what the issue is, all right? Correct? You can bring your own thoughts and process that. But because he doesn't explore any of that, what are we supposed to take except for as a visceral, you know, ride through America during a civil war? Like, what is he trying to say ultimately with the movie? Like, I think you said it pretty good in the beginning. It's more about a warning. Like, this is what it could be if we don't. But is that what you're saying? The main message for you is like, hey, if we don't get our shit together, this is what could it become.
That is what was the main takeaway for me. When I left, that's what impacted me the most. It was everything about what was being captured and how it was being captured that impacted me the most when I left the film. And I took all of the setting, the protagonist, the story, I just took it as this is my best vehicle to show that. And sure, maybe there's been a whole bunch of anti-war films that have gone deeper into it and have shown this. But for me, right now, where's the place is going to have the most impact? America, what is the best way to unbiased show what happens when he said it, when polarization happens in any way, shape, or form? Press. Mm-hmm. How is that going to happen? I consider those aspects more vehicles of his. If it's anti-war, if it's anti-polarization, if it's just the desensitization, what's the best vehicles to get that message out there with the least amount of, without somebody going in and say, oh, you're talking about Texas. Oh, you're talking about California. Because if they would have had Texas and California on one side or the other, somebody would have went after him like, what are you saying about conservatives? What are you saying about liberals? Yeah. And he's like, I'm not trying to say anything about politics. I'm trying to say something about the aftermath of any kind of polarized situation in general. And again, none of your points are invalid at all. I understand.
Yeah, completely. No, totally.
I think I took the impact in a different way than a lot of people did.
Benny, any other thoughts about the film and spoilers?
I'll say this. If you want an echo chamber, you make a really serious, highly political, really deep dive movie. If you want to actually get to people's hearts and minds, you make something that's entertaining and easily accessible to the masses that people don't initially just walk out of pissed. And so, you know, by making it a little more surface level, by going out of his way not to give you the political things to hang on to, and by making the movie generally entertaining, the movie's message will have more lasting effect. Like, in all honesty, other than someone that is like a really hardcore like movie snob, really into Oscar movies, when is the last time you ever had someone sit down with you and talk about The Killing Fields? It's not an everyday conversation you have, but something that's more like popcorny, like Die Hard, not in any way sending a message, but it's a movie that people still talk about 30 years later. So if you have a message, even if it's a lighter message, but you embed it in something that's entertaining and something that people can go back to 5-10 years later, you're going to have a more lasting effect in the culture than you are just preaching at someone in a really serious movie for 2 hours, because people aren't going to go back to that.
That's interesting, because movies like, so one of my favorite war films is Platoon. I think that's a great film. I think it's highly entertaining, highly disturbing, and it has a lot to say about not only Vietnam, but honestly more about American soldiers and what was going on in America than it did the actual Vietnam War. It showed the kind of people that were brought in, the classes. And I think it also showed about in Vietnam, it was more about our soldiers against our own soldiers than it was us against Vietnam. We were our own worst enemy in a lot of ways. Whereas this movie doesn't quite have that kind of dilemma or, you know, moral code or moral, you know, debate going on for me. Like, you know, we meet Jesse Plemons, we never know what he's doing or what he's up to. We just know he starts killing them. When it comes to the gas station, I mean, what was he killing? Were all those people in the truck? He was killing
everyone in the truck. He was killing people because of their origin. So he was just offing people on racial and national basis. That's why he's asking them, where are you from? And then he shoots the Chinese guy.
So all those people in the truck were all minorities?
Yes.
I thought there was a white woman in there, I thought, at one point.
He is just carrying out his own little genocide under the guise of these military actions, which if you have a civil war in this country, mm-hmm. there will be little pockets that break off and use it as a guide to do their own little horrible things. So there's a very like special message in that own little bracket is that if you let the big things break down, then these little horrible evil pockets that we keep suppressed, they come to the surface.
Interesting. I wish the movie would have gave me a little bit more of that. Like you pulled that from the movie. I didn't pull that from when I saw the movie. I was like, I have no idea who these people in the truck are. Are you telling me every person he came up to, he said, where are you from? And he shot him and threw him in the truck. So like, we didn't really explore it. It's happening. And you pulled that from there, but like, I didn't pull that from there. The people at the gas station, I mean, they just want money. They want, you know, Canadian money. And then there's people in there because they were trying to, you know, loot or steal. It just shows like, you know, that happens in any war. You know, things happen. People are at their worst, and the worst war brings out the worst and the best of humanity, I think, is something that you could get from just about any war film. So I just don't know what this movie to me was bringing new to the table, except for the setting of it being America. And then if you're going to put the setting in America, I feel like you got to give me a little bit more than, you know, these photojournalists capturing war scenes that could have been in any other country. But again, this is just me. I obviously didn't like the movie as much as you guys. Let me ask you about Kirsten Dunst, because I will also say I thought she was fine. I didn't think she was great. I didn't think she was a standout. I think all the supporting actors did a much better job. I thought Kirsten Dunst, you know, I like Kirsten Dunst. I like her in other films. I like her some performances, like in Fargo, I thought she was great in the TV series. But I didn't feel like she brought a whole lot to the role, and I feel like I didn't feel her, you know, wariness or her desensitization as much as I have in like other films. Did she work for you guys, or did you feel like somebody could have been stronger in that position?
I felt it. And I think one reason I felt it is because I don't think I've seen Kirsten Dunst in something where she's acted this strong in a while. And it's a combination of maybe she hasn't been acting in a lot of things that I've seen. And the last couple of things I've seen, I haven't seen the side of her. But I definitely felt the wariness. But I'm with you. It was Wagner Moura. It was Stephen McKinley Henderson. It was Jesse Plemons. It was even Nick Offerman in his smaller instances that stood out to me more. But I thought Kirsten Dunst did a fairly damn good job kind of being the through point of the film, connecting all these people. So I thought she did a really standout job in this role. It's one of the better roles I've seen from her in a minute.
Interesting. Betty, how do you feel about her?
I thought she did a great job of playing numb. I think it's kind of hard to stand out when your character's primary emotion is just emotional fatigue. But that came through for me. Like I said, it was something that I related to as someone that's dealt with sort of compassion fatigue. So I got where she was coming through. Got sure what she was doing.
Did you buy her saving the younger journalist at the end the way she did?
Like I said, that was that wasn't the strongest part of the movie, but it didn't bother me.
Yeah. Is it me?
I believed her saving her. I just didn't believe the way she did it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think it quite worked for me. Also, when the guy, you know, saves them by hitting Jesse Plemons with the car, the guy from Dune, do you guys remember his name?
Stephen McKinley Henderson.
Stephen McKinley Henderson. He dies, and it feels like a gut check moment. To the point where when they get back to the base, they're just tore up about it. Like even in a moment when they found out he was shot, they were so distressed. Kirsten Dunst, you know, her best friend who she's sharing his truck with, sees her gets killed, basically steps over her, goes to the president, says, I need a quote. Offerman says, don't let them kill me. And he's like, that'll do. It seems like both her and this guy just walked right past Dunst getting killed and didn't show any emotion. Didn't really seem to care. I'm sure maybe they did afterwards, but I don't know. It was hard for me. Like in that moment when she died, it seemed like there was zero reaction from her two closest people that she was with. Did you guys notice that?
I think that's the point of it, is that these people are so emotionally exhausted.
No, but they're not.
They don't care.
No, but they weren't, because just a day before when their friend died, they literally he was yelling his head off in despair and grief.
But you have, if you listen to the dialogue in that, that's not what he's yelling about. What he is pissed about is that he thinks he's missing the story in DC.
Oh, I did not read that at all like that. You thought what he was mad about?
That is what he was about. You listen to the dialogue, like he's like,
which because what I think JT's talking about is the silent screen that he had.
Yes,
the
silent screen.
The silent screen was definitely
for the loss of his friend.
Stephen McKinley, the loss of his friend, and then he is further pissed off about the and I think that's separate.
I think he's more pissed off about the story. I'll be honest with you.
And what I took away from it is that Henderson's character died not in the pursuit of what they were looking for.
Yeah.
So he's more pissed off because this is two dudes who are taking advantage of the situation to the extreme, and he died after seeing his other best friend die from two dudes not even on the job.
Yeah.
If you're on the job and you know you might die on the job, it's a little different. And in the heat of it, them being in it that long, Wagner Moura seeing her die and then moving forward is like, fuck, she's dead. Now I have to get this quote. You cannot kill this guy without me getting this quote because of what just happened. And then afterwards, after the adrenaline's all done, then he would do it. Kind of just like how after the adrenaline wore down and them driving off, figuring it out and trying to save him and having to drive for I don't know how long with basically his dead body there, then he lets it go. I feel like that probably would have happened later. That's kind of how I saw that part.
Also, why are they just doing photography? Nowadays, are you not taking video of all this? Are you not documenting it with like a little HD camera? Like, why are they sticking with old black and white photography?
Vintage people who got their one Lee got her start with photography, so she's sticking with photography. Wagner Moura was not the photographer; he's the interviewer or whatever. And there's plenty of people like Kaylee Spaney's character who's like, I was Moose, I was in it. You got me into it, Lee. You are the one who got me into this, and this other lady that she talks to at the beginning of the film, like, you are the reason I'm in this, so she's going to follow the same steps of just getting photography and not spinning it. So,
understood. Guys, Moose is joining us. He wasn't here from the beginning of the review.
So wait, let me get this straight. Did America win or not? I'm just curious. Like,
I asked the same question.
It doesn't fucking matter. It does not matter.
So, Moose, I'd love to get your thoughts on the film. So I'll just catch you up to where we're at here.
Yeah, sure.
Amaru and Benny loved this movie. I think Amaru says it's his favorite film of the year. Benny, would you say it's your favorite of the year? Yes. He's shaking his head yes. I love when you shake your head.
I was just going to say, this is an audio-only podcast, so we'll just narrate Benny's actions from here on out.
Moose, my take has basically been this felt kind of like something that I enjoyed my experience in the theater. I enjoyed the visceral. I enjoyed the tension. I enjoyed the theater going experience, but I feel like there wasn't much to be said from the movies about obviously the Civil War because they don't get into politics. I felt like the photography journalist angle was pretty surface for me. It didn't really work too much. I've seen much better films about journalism and war, movies like A Private War with Rosamund Pike, The Killing Fields from Roland Joffe. I just seen better films. So because the movie doesn't really get into politics, which I didn't really need, but to me it just makes America more of a setting, not a warning. And I felt like the photography angle of it, I also felt like they felt like they had bulletproof.
Are you asking my opinion, or are you?
I'm giving you all of our opinions, so you can comment on all of ours.
He's just going through the entire podcast for you.
Yeah, I'm basically giving you a quick recap. So that's what I'm doing. That's basically where we're at. We're towards the end of the segment here, but now that you're here, what are your thoughts on the film?
I like the A-Train and Benny very much enjoyed this movie. And it's hard to say that you enjoy this movie, but I like this movie.
I was about to say.
Because the movie is very much a cautionary tale. And I understand like some of the criticisms behind like, well, it doesn't take a stand. It's, you know, doesn't choose one side over the other. But this is a cautionary tale about what civil war would look like in the United States. And I actually think that it's the right perspective. Like, one, technically, this is a very impressive movie. Like, Alex Garland always does very, very impressive movies. And again, this is just another home run from like a technical movie standpoint. But I thought the like tension was very palpable. Like, the action sequences were intense. This showed the horrors of war, and it showed it in what, in my opinion, was a much more scary theater of war. And that's our backyards. That's our cities. That's, you know, in the countryside. That's like in Washington, D.C. Like, these are all places that, like, for us are all obviously like we call home. It's not like we're watching a war happen, you know, overseas. Like, this is a war in our backyards. And so I think that's what made this movie strike that much more of like attention. I thought the like relationship between Kirsten Dunst and I'm coming in blind here. What was her name? Kaylee
Spaney.
Thank you, Amado. I thought that like their like relationship development was great. We've gone into spoiler territory, right? So we can talk about deep in spoilers, Kirsten Dunst. Like, I thought, like, as she progressed in the movie, like Kaylee Spaney's arc progressed in the movie, like the death should have meant so much more to Kaylee Spaney and Wagner Moura's characters, Kirsten Dunst's death, but like, it's almost like the lessons that have been taught by Kirsten Dunst to Kaylee Spaney up to this point have kind of taken over. Like, detach yourself, remember where you're at, get that shot. Like, there will be time to be able to like have these quiet times. And that it kind of shows that throughout the movie, like they go into these battlefield sequences and they're just kind of unaffected. Like, Wagner Moura's character is obviously like this adrenaline junkie, and he's getting this like high off of being in these environments. But then he's got these polar opposites. He gets these high highs from these environments, but then he doesn't know how to be able to like process what he's seen. And I love Wagner Moura. He was Pablo Escobar in the TV series Narcos, and I've liked him since then. Look, any movie that casts Stephen McKinley Henderson has got my vote.
We just, I said that the second we, okay. The first thing I said, we got him. First thing I said.
Dude, sign me up for anything that guy is in. I love that dude. And yeah, there was some stuff that I saw coming. Like, I think we all saw his death coming. It was very much alluded to. He's old, you know, he's kind of a reporter at the end of the line, but he doesn't want to quite give up. And obviously, like, this is a profession that he's chosen, so he's willing to kind of risk it all. I thought his sacrifice, like, even though we kind of saw that coming a mile away, it was still very like meaningful. And I thought like it was still very like emotional and impactful. I think the final end sequence is some of the best like action sequences and like horrors of war that you'll ever see. Like, every bullet hit, like everything was so much louder. It was so amped up that like I felt every single like emotional beat, like as it was happening during that final like storming of the White House. So I dug the movie a lot. Yeah, it's not my favorite of the year. Dune 2 still at the moment is my favorite of the year. This is my second favorite. I really enjoyed this movie. And again, this isn't a movie that you enjoy, but it is a movie that you watch and you go, damn, that is a powerful movie. This is a powerful movie. I understand people's criticisms that like it's an election year, he should have taken a side on either way. But look, the idea was to show the horrors of war, and I think that Alex Garland covered that perfectly. So I would highly recommend this movie. And yeah, I thought the cast was great. It wasn't a lot of them, but the four of them, like, their quiet moments were some of the best parts of the movie. Like, I think one of my favorite segments was where Lee's character, Kirsten Dunst, and Jesse, Kaylee Spaney, like, Kaylee Spaney is developing her film. And they're like sitting in this abandoned stadium, and it just kind of shows the old versus new. Like, earlier in the movie, Kirsten Dunst was like, I can't upload my photos, there's no internet. And Kaylee Spaney is kind of a younger generation of photographer, and she has all these different little tips and tricks and stuff like that that she's learned. She's a little more tech savvy than So I don't know. I thought that like the quiet moments worked really, really well in this movie. The other like favorite was when Kirsten Dunst and Stephen McKinley Henderson were sitting on the couch and they were just viewing the war that was a few miles from them. And they just had this kind of little like tete-a-tete with each other. And at one point, like he says something and she's like, shut the fuck up, writer. Like they're just kind of like professionals, like taking jabs at each other. So the movie worked for me. I thought it's another great movie by Alex Garland. And it's a, like, it's a fascinating, like look at what Civil War would look like on an American like level in today's day and age. So yeah, you can argue the like finer points of why is California in, you know, Texas all of a sudden aligned, but there's enough hints in the movie to be able to be like, okay, well, this president has forced his way into a third term. He's dissolved the FBI and he's obviously like approved airstrikes on US citizens. And so you have to think, okay, well then California and Texas were probably the states that the airstrikes were approved. And that's why they created this, you know, Western forces. But yeah, it works. Sorry, Amadou, it's great to see you. Buddy. I kind of jumped in and capitalized.
We'll use that as your closing overall thoughts on the film. I'm just glad we're able to get your thoughts on the film. All right, we'll do our closing thoughts and we'll exit the show here. Benny, what are your overall thoughts on the film?
I will be surprised if it's not in my top five of the year at the end of the year. Like, I love the movie. I thought it worked as like a weird horror movie. I thought it worked as an action movie. Thought it worked as a drama. And I thought it worked as like a really abstract comedy, like in its own way. It's a movie about desensitization and what it's like to, you know, separate ourselves as a nation that by its very existence, it's going to cause both of those things. So like, there are so many different levels the movie works for me on that. So I love the movie. I encourage everyone to go out to see it. And like I said, it'll be in my top five of the year, I think.
Nice. Amaru, what do you think?
Funny thing with Civil War for me is whenever I have arguments about movies with people that a movie I like and others don't, or vice versa, I always try to keep in mind that when I go to a movie, I need to judge a movie by the movie that's being given to me and not what I'm looking for. And what's funny about it is, JT, all your criticisms about it are, I don't disagree with at all. It's surface level politically, it's surface level with the photojournalism. A lot of the things kind of do seem unrealistic in terms of like how they are able to survive all the battles. For me, I loved those choices because the movie I came out of was everything was a vehicle to show the horrors of war. That's what he's doing. I don't care why it happened. I don't care how it happened. I don't care what is the most impactful way for me to deliver war and polarization and fighting and not listening to each other leads to the most horrific things ever. So I don't want to go into the depths of photojournalism. I don't want to go into the depths of politics. I don't want to go into the depths of whether or not they realistically would be alive or not. I want to, one, you got to connect to these characters. So make sure these characters are great. But two, I need a vehicle to show the consequences of terrible decisions. And I thoroughly enjoyed that. I thoroughly had we don't want to use enjoy, but that's the best way to say it. I don't know how you enjoy such a visceral movie, but that's what he was able to create. Probably the most rewatchable horrific movie I've seen in a long, long time, where it's like, wow, I would go back and watch these scenes that made me feel horrible, but somehow had the comedy, somehow had the hyper stylized elements that made me connect to everybody. It's just a movie I came out of like, damn, that was damn good and damn entertaining, but also left me with the idea of what is going to happen, whether it's here or any decision, but definitely here because we have things that are at least touching a nerve. What happens if we don't pay attention to that? So that's why it's made me think the most, it's made me talk the most, but it also was on just a movie level. One that I just really enjoyed watching and experiencing.
Awesome. Great. Those were all great summaries of the film. So yeah, I'll just do a quick recap of how I felt overall. I think this is a movie that when I was in the theater, I was never bored. I thought it was a great visceral experience. I thought visually it was really well made. The scene where they take over the White House is one of the most impressive shot action slash war scenes I've seen probably since 1917, the last really great war film, in my opinion. I think the biggest thing this movie has going for it is the fact you get to see America, what it would be like during a civil war. The vehicle in which he told that story for me is what didn't really work. I think there's much better films about war journalism. I think there's much better movies about civil war. I think this movie doesn't really add anything new except for this setting. I think all those ideas that, you know, really touched you, Amaru, like the war, the consequences, the things that could happen, and the moral things that could happen, you know, the moral war that people go through. I've seen a lot of war films. I've seen a lot of anti-war films. This to me felt like nothing really new except for the setting. I think it is a cool setting, though. That is the hook of this movie, Civil War. What would American Civil War look like today? Not back in, you know, the 1920s or 30s or whatever. What would it look like today? And that was the interesting part of this film. I just wish it had a more human story and more human characters. I thought Kristen Dunst was fine. I thought the relationship between her and the young girl wasn't done very well. I think it felt a little rushed. And I think some of the characters in the movie, some of the choices they make, especially Kristen Dunst saving the girl at the end, kind of went against everything that we knew about the character beforehand. So there were really just character choices and story choices. They didn't stick with me. I feel like I said this earlier in a review, I really enjoyed my time in the movie, but I didn't really have much. Everything I got out of the movie, I got while I was watching it. Alex Garland, what I love about his previous films is that I would always think about those films for days, weeks, months, years later. I still think about Ex Machina. I still think about Annihilation. I still think about his show Devs. Men, I won't get into that movie. That was a huge miss. But I just feel like there's not a lot for me to chew on in this movie. Like, a lot of times I'll go see a movie and we'll go have dinner afterwards. I feel like after I left the theater, I got everything he was trying to say. It was pretty clean cut. It wasn't much to discuss afterwards. How would a civil war in America look like? Yeah, it would probably kind of look like that. But I feel like the character and the story doesn't really give much else to chew on. But that's just my opinion. These three guys love the movie, and I know a lot of other people love this movie also. I doubt it'll make my top 10, but I'm pretty sure it'll make a lot of other people's top 10s. But that's what's great about film, everybody. We all come in with our different expectations, our different, you know, what we want to see, what we don't want to see. We all come out with different opinions. That's what makes talk about movies so much fun, especially with these guys. Amaru, thank you so much for coming on the show. Do us a favor, plug whatever you need to plug. Tell us where you're working on.
You can find me, Amaru Moses, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and all three of those things. The only thing I am going to post about, aside from the Knicks being the 2 seed and hopefully beating the 76ers or the Heat and getting to the second round, is Bite Size Breakdown. I am one of the senior writers at Bite Size Breakdown. We've been going for a while. We just started a new podcast on YouTube, The Bite Size Breakdown, just weekly conversations about movie news, stuff that's going out. But as always, go to BiteSizeBreakdown.com. Our key thing is writing. We write multi-person reviews for television and movies. So you heard all four of us talk about our own opinions on Civil War. On Bite Size Breakdown right now is another four-person review with in 100 words or less of what four of our writers thought about the film. On top of also just feature articles, a lot of top fives. We're going through a top five for the rest of the year. Our top fives are like the 25 best blank of the century. We just talked about the 25 best actors of the century. Sorry, the five best actors of the last 25 years. Next month is going to be the five best actresses of the last 25 years. Things like that. Go check it out. We got a lot for you to look forward to. And hopefully this summer, I will be bringing back One Gotta Stay, another tournament. It should be a spicy one. I can't wait for that. So
nice. Awesome, man. Well, thanks so much for coming on. We're going to definitely have you on again.
Yes, please.
Bite Size Media. Is that right? Bite Size Media?
Bite Size Breakdown.
Sorry.
Bite Size Breakdown everywhere.
Bite Size Breakdown. Check it out. It's a really fun site. A lot of great people over there. Paige is also part of there. We've had her on the show a few times. Yeah, that's going to do it for the show, guys. Next week, we have two movies hitting the theaters. We have Abigail, the vampire girl horror movie, and we have Guy Ritchie's new Inglourious Basterds type film with Henry Cavill. I can't remember the title because it's super long. But we'll be reviewing one, if not both of those movies next week. Check it out. That's it. Moose, anything you want to say before we go?
No, Amadou, thanks for being on. I'm sorry I missed the majority of it. Got home just in time to at least see you for a little bit and chop it up. I'm glad you and Benny really enjoyed this movie. I did too.
It's okay. It was great to see you. It's also hilarious that JTE couldn't remember the site of where he worked for
very short time.
Hilarious.
It was a very short time, but yes. All right, guys. Nice. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next week. Keep watching those movies.
Good night, Western Forces.